or I'm sorry, Coins Plus has been in business for over two decades, serving with honesty, integrity, and professionalism as our motto. We strive to be a high-volume, low-margin precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service. We offer the highest-rated privately held depository service in the Western region. As people get a tour of our building and see who we really are, I think it helps them understand the significance of it and the security of it and what makes us different. I was just reading an article the other day written by a guy who is kind of a blogger in our industry, warning people that when you're buying precious metals or things like that, cheaper, you don't run out and try to buy cheaper, okay? I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like there's a huge variance in price. But you don't ship your money across the country. You know, I was reading about all these massive bankruptcies and in our industry. Huge. I mean, huge. 50 million, 80 million, 35 million, 38 million. Unfathomable to me, because the way it is basically when you buy here, you own. Okay, you come in with cash, boom, you either walk out with it, or if we're building a portfolio, it's a few days, whatever. You're locked in then and there. That's just how it works. No games ever under any circumstances. We never float. What you pay is what, you know, when you walk in, that's the market. That's what you pay, and it stays that way. We've been in business a long time. We've had never any kind of legal actions, no complaints. Northwest Territorial Mint had, I think, over 400 complaints with the state attorney general for failure to deliver product before they finally went bankrupt. There was other stuff. They had libel suits. They had all kinds of stuff going on. They had lawsuits. It was crazy. It was a Ponzi scheme. I don't understand. The guy who ran it, it was out of Seattle, and there may be listeners there that bought there and waited for years. I had a gal come in one time who had waited 2 years on a couple boxes of Silver Eagles. The guy out in Coeur d'Alene went under, so on and so forth. So I'm not going to dwell on that too much. It's kind of negative. But the bottom line is honesty, integrity, and professionalism is our motto. You know, a long time. Well, anyway, we've called ourselves Coins Plus, the name you can trust, since our start. We just do things the right way. Our colors, conveniently for today in this show, are red, white, and blue, okay? So what do we got going? Tomorrow is the 4th of July, okay? It's our day of independence. I've got a ton of stuff pulled up here and various notes, and I kind of want to go over them. But it's interesting, as I began, kind of constructing some information for the show, I got into a lot about self-motivation, self-driven, improvement, self-improvement. I really took a lot of notes, and I don't know if I should kind of talk about our rulers first. Our founding fathers, okay, is, you know, we've got, I guess, basically, what does the 4th of July celebrate? It celebrates our independence, okay, which was technically declared by the Declaration of Independence. What day? July 4th, 1776. So that's probably an appropriate place to start. I won't go over the whole document, but I'll scan it. It says, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume the powers of the earth, connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which, I love this, the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Now, you know, let's touch on that real quick. The laws of nature and the natures of God. Okay, I've talked a lot about socialism, communism, social media, controlling and censoring our speech. All of this stuff is right here. Folks, I've talked about the physical law, okay, the laws of physics. You know what those are. I mean, Isaac Newton, dropped the apple thing, whatever. I don't know if that's exactly the case, but what I do know to be the case is that there are measurable physical laws, okay? So you know about gravity and entropy and momentum and energy conservation and, for every action, there's an equal opposite reaction. And so those are the physical laws of nature. Now, they're talking about the natural laws of nature. And basically, they're saying that they're just as significant. America is a country that was founded on a republic with a firm set of rules and regulations at its base based on the belief that God gave us these rights. When you get into socialism or communism or Marxism, whatever you want to call it, folks, I don't care what you call it, but it's all the same. It all ends up as militant, tyrannical dictatorships, which will ultimately become communism. The violence, the destruction. What country do you know of that has gone down that road that has not completely, utterly failed? If you know, if you can't think of any, it's because there are none. It all has the ultimate outcome. It's just like everything else in God's word. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he shall also reap, reap. So to the flesh, a.k.a. man, run governments or man-given rights, you'll sow corruption. You sow to the spirit, a.k.a. God, you'll reap life. And Jesus Christ says, he whom I'm set free is free indeed. Jesus Christ frees souls. Jesus Christ frees people. And it may be hard to believe that many revolts, many wars, many declarations of independence, all this stuff is literally driven by Jesus Christ becoming the savior of a group of people. A reformation or, any kind of spiritual God-breathed change. Once missionaries show up in little lands, it's amazing what happens. There are still countries out there that are so direly, desperately destroyed that they need Jesus Christ. Sudan's insane. I was just speaking with a friend of mine today about, we went, right now they've got all the poisoning in the Dominican Republic, which is not good. But my wife and I went down there years back, and I think around 2013 or so, maybe 14, and stayed at a beautiful place called Tortuga Bay. It was a Oscar de la Renta type hotel. It's on an amazing privately held property that's like hundreds of thousands of acres. It's got the only privately owned international airport in the world by, I think the guy was Ranieri or something. He's the president of the country. We actually got to meet him and hang out with him. And it was interesting. There was five different hotels along this, miles and miles and miles and miles of beach and hundreds of homes. It's just a really neat area. It's in the Punta Cana area. But moral of the story was, we rented a car, and people don't maybe realize the continent that the Dominican Republic is on, half of it is, the eastern half is Dominican Republic, the western half is Haiti, okay? And when we rented a car, I'd joke to all these people, I'd say, where's Haiti? We want to go to Haiti. And they'd go, no, don't do that. You don't want to do that. And I just would do it kind of as a joke. But if you look at a map aerial, a real, not just a map, but like a satellite image, you will literally see that the demarcation line between Haiti and Dominican Republic, you'll see completely different foliage. The Dominican Republic side is Christian. It is green, primarily beautiful. The Haitian side, back in the 1700s, they adopted, you know, voodoo and Satanism. The land is dead. It's destroyed. It's decimated. The people are just in dire poverty, violence, corruption. It's a horrible place to be. God blesses the land of those who believe in him. And he has blessed America. And the Bible says, you know, if the those people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray, you know, I'll heal their land. Who's he talking to? He's not talking to the non-believers. He's talking to the believers. That's you and me. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm perfect or you're not or anything, but we need to be praying for our land. We have got to pray for our land. It's an absolute necessity, and our country needs it because it's being overrun and overtaken by non-believers. and non-believers often, you know, atheists, God haters, whatever. So, you know, we've got, you know, this problem with our rulership, the idea that the law must apply uniformly to all, okay, was something that our founding fathers considered to be a fundamental importance, all right? In James Madison's words, something he said, quote, without which every government degenerates into tyranny. In other words, if the law is not applied uniformly to everyone, he said, without this, every government degenerates into tyranny. There's got to be equality under the law. Lady Justice must be blind. Our federal courts are so corrupt. They violated all the Bill of Rights. I mean, it's so bad. If people get caught up in the federal system, you are so done. And it is even like this special counsel that wasted all their time going after Trump for something they knew darn well he did not do. Okay, this Trump collusion with Russia malarkey. It's just filth. It's basically our rulers not applying the law equally to each and every citizen. A system in which elected officials can make legal discriminations in favor of themselves and a particular class of society, okay, special interest groups, you know, the elite. This is what happens. It's inconsistent with a free society. According to Madison, again, James Madison, he said it creates a state of things in which it may be said with some truth that the laws are made for the few, not for the many. This is what happens when things start to fall apart. Now, look at Facebook. Look at Google, as I've been talking about. These companies are censoring speech. They're controlling information. And all of a sudden, your freedom of speech has to go through a filter, all right? It was never designed that way. Let's say it was never, I wouldn't even go as far as, you know, there's people that say, well, the founding fathers never suspected this had happened. It didn't matter, okay? The laws were the laws. The rule of law was the rule of law, right? And your Bill of Rights applies no matter what technology comes along. One of the biggest problems I've had, you know, or discussed with someone lately is lobbyists. I mean, why does Google spend billions of dollars a year on lobbying, right? So there's companies, I'm going to look it up here real quick. I'm checking how much, I'm seeing if I can find out a list here. Let's see if I can find out a list of which companies spend the most on lobbyists, lobbying. And they'll probably tell me, but they won't tell me how much. Let's see here. Well, anyway, you go back to the 90s real quick, and under Clinton, they went to Microsoft, and they wanted Bill Gates and Paul Allen to build a backdoor portal, a secret portal, so the government could get into anyone's computer at any time. Paul Allen and Bill Gates said, no, not right, violation of privacy, et cetera, et cetera. And so Clinton came out and started to bash on Bill Gates, and he was ungiving or not generous and so on and so forth. You've got hundreds of millions of dollars being spent by like Google. Boeing spends $17 million, AT&T $17 million. Yeah, Google's in the, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, what do you do with that money? Who are you bribing? Who are you paying off? You know, you got Comcast, some other company, Southern Corporation, Dow, of course, which, you know, makes all kinds of chemicals, Lockheed Martin, which is Cheney, I think, Dick Cheney, FedEx, big time, $12.5 million. Northrop Grumman, another military company, $12 million. Why are they spending this money? Because they're bribing people. They're paying people off. They're sending them on beautiful trips, buying their wives beautiful jewelry, and you name it, you know, cars, what are they, you know, jets, planes, boats, whatever. Exxon. Anyway, you get the picture. These big companies pay this huge money. So Bill Gates, after this situation came up with the dehumanization or degradation by Clinton of Bill Gates. He created the Gates Society, and he had not spent a penny on lobbying. And now he spends, they say, $250 million a year. I don't know for sure, but I just know that it's absolutely, people are buying favoritism, which is wrong, R-O-N-G. Just kidding, W-R-N-G. But anyway, it's not what our system's set up for, okay? So we've got a specialty class that gets specialty rights and privileges, which is terrible. And we've got socialism running rampant. You watch this, these Democratic debates, folks. At no time in the history of this country has there ever, ever been people with such gall to stand up there and manifest and breathe the words about socialism that they're breathing. They're absolutely demanding it. They're saying it's a necessity. It's crazy. So many Americans are disgusted, right? So, you know, because Madison's words have absolute relevance to our time. The words that, you know, the law has to be applied uniformly. And you can't have legal discrimination. Look at Hillary Clinton, and it goes on. You know, many Americans are disgusted and shocked. There was a 60 Minutes report that featured the findings of a new book written by Hoover Institution's Peter Schweitzer, who I know, he's an amazing guy, that demonstrated the alarming extent to which members of Congress are essentially immune from laws that apply to the rest of society, okay? Many members, like House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, have, by leveraging their political connections and insider political intelligence, reaped hundreds of millions of dollars in profits from trading activity, you know, stock market trading, that would, hands down, be illegal insider trading if done by private citizens. And this, I guess, in a nutshell, is where we're going as a nation. And I'm sorry to be reporting it this way, but it is what it is, right? I mean, and let's look, we got to be looking at the truth. So the truth shall set you free. Back to the Declaration of Independence. So he said, assume the powers of the earth. He talked about the laws of nature, and nature's God. Okay. So nature's God, the creator, All right. One thing they uniformly agreed on back then, that there was a creator, the group of men that started this country believed in it. There's just no evidence of atheism. Now, atheism is the dumbest. It's sad. It's sick. And it's a sign of misery and compulsion and impulsive behavior and society everywhere you look pumping sin at you, whether it be billboards, and television. I heard a thing today that people watch 6 hours a day on average of TV. Well, I can tell you that ain't me, all right? I don't watch very little TV. I'll watch a little bit of news, and that's it. I don't even know what else to look. I will admit I watch movies, but that way you can control what's coming over your airwaves, and that's even getting super hard, hard to watch, you know. I like to watch stuff that's light. I like action, but it becomes so vulgar in so many cases, although I did martial arts for years, and I really appreciate some of these martial arts movies. They get a little too violent, but I like it in a way because I love martial arts. So our founding fathers, to go on with the Declaration of Independence, written on July 4, 1776, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator. Hang on, I gotta fix something here real quick. My apologies. It jumped off the wrong page. Okay. They're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, think about it. What's the first one? Life. And we've got laws that allow abortion, okay? Now, that's, you know, on the federal level shouldn't be in place. People say, oh, if we legalized abortion or made it illegal, there'd be all these back alley abortion, botch jobs. There probably would. I don't know enough about it, but I know that every single person is an individual, unique person in God's eyes. Man has free will. They say the richest ground on earth is the graveyard. And if you think about that for a minute, that makes a lot of sense. You know, because it's important to think about the fact that when you, on Judgment Day, people always think we're going to be judged for our actions. They never think about their inactions. As James said, he who knows what's right to do and fails to do it, for him it is a sin. So we're not only judged for our bad actions, but even more so, aren't we probably judged for our inactions? You know, we'll be judged for the talents and dreams that God put in our hearts and what we did with them. Okay, we've got the parable of talents. We know about that. That's very clear where it says, you know, a ruler left. And then he came back, it said, a very long time later. And basically reaped, you know, he said he gave 5 talents to one, 2 to another, and 1 to another. And he said, based on what their ability was. So he knows each of our abilities. So we can't compare ourselves to each other. However, one thing to be careful about, and this may all tie together, is comparing yourself to yourself, okay? And what do I mean by that? What I mean is looking at you, comparing your 50-year-old body to your 17-year-old body, or comparing your 22-year-old marriage to your third year of marriage. You know, it's not that. Life goes on. Things change. You have to make the most of every moment and live in the now. You do what you can with what you got now. It's very important. In fact, the way we do anything is the way we do everything. The way we think about anything is the way we think about everything. It's our thought process. If we let negativity crawl in, it's going to consume us. And I'm not again, saying I'm perfect. I've struggled with that myself. People struggle with depression, actual clinical depression, where they say there's, you know, it's clinical. There's chemical imbalances and things like that. So I'm not going to sit here and judge this and that. I do believe that things said to us, things done to us. I know I had a rough upbringing, and I struggle at times with bad things that were said to me by parents, teachers, friends, whatever, that, you know, essentially lay a curse on you. And I've had relatives that, you know, people can curse you verbally, and you don't realize it, but those curses can take root and take hold, and we need to break those chains. We need to shatter those chains and declare the freedom of Christ who set us free, and know that God made you the way you are for a reason. Every one of you is a unique individual. That is why the Declaration of Independence was written, because we're all different, but we have got to be provided an environment where we can act out not only our talents, but also the dreams. And he, you know, delight yourself in the Lord, he'll give you the desires of your heart. God plants dreams in our hearts, okay? So some of you maybe should start a business or write a book or, you know, but you won't do it. And you keep putting it off and you don't know why. And maybe it's television, maybe it's fear, maybe it's other relatives. And, you know, it's important to write your dreams and goals down. I used to be really good about that. I don't do that so well anymore. But you got to watch writing. I know a person who overwrites, overjournals, and they get into this dark downside, and he's wanted to write a book, and he wants to add this real dark side to it, kind of this Stephen King stuff. But that's not what God put in his heart. I've known this person a very long time, and he has a heart of gold, but he's sensitive. He has put a veil over it and become very unforgiving and very bitter and, made decisions that just aren't godly. We got to seek God. We got to obey God. We got to follow God, and we got to serve God no matter how we feel. He's the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We cannot, you know, when people say, and that's the atheist thing, if God came down right now in front of me and performed a miracle, then I'd believe. Well, the Bible is full of stories of that exact thing. Jesus Christ came through and did it, and the Pharisees wanted to kill him. The religious leaders who really, religion and spirituality is separate. The problem with, like, the Catholic Church that formed in 300 A.D., was around in the 300s, Constantine wanted to be popular. So he created a church that initially implemented Christianity, paganism, and Judaism. Later on, Constantine II hated Jews, of course, because throughout history the devil's hated Jews because he wants to destroy God's people. And they made it illegal to Judaize, which is how we ended up with church on Sunday. Now, I'm not a Seventh-day Adventist, but it is the only commandment that we don't obey, which is kind of bizarre. I think, if you think about it, the Sabbath, after going to Israel, it's not like I didn't know this before, but I did witness Shabbat, their actual, you know, worship or their honor of the Sabbath. Okay. Now, like I said, I'm not Jewish, nor am I a Seventh-day Adventist. You know, Paul said, whatever day you call the Sabbath, keep it holy, etc. So, you know, we're okay there, according to Paul. Then there's people that debate the writings of Paul and so on and so forth. And, you know, that's a whole nother conversation for another day. I can show you some very interesting scriptures, like I think Acts 21 and 22, where Paul came back and he repented for some of his teachings because James said, look, I've got all these Jews here that are zealous to fulfill the law, and you're telling them the law's dead. And Jesus didn't say he abolished the law, he came to fulfill it. So hypothetically, the Sabbath, the day that God made The day that God rested was actually Saturday. Sunday was the first day of the week, not the last day of the week. And I'm, again, I know there's people on both sides of the fence. Churches are established around Sunday, and, you know, there's stories and arguments, and I don't want to get into any of those, but I just thought I'd bring that up. anyhow, so I think if we go to, like, Matthew 25, which I love Matthew, you know, first they've got the parable of the virgins, the ones that were prepared for the bridegroom to come back, and those that were not prepared, and their lamps were filled with oil, five of them, I think, and five weren't, and the other five ran. They tried to borrow the oil from the ones, and they ran off, and they didn't, and they couldn't have it or whatever. And they ran off, and they went, and they got oil from someone else. And by the time they came back, they basically missed the boat. The bridegroom was gone, and it's a parable basically saying that we need to be prepared for Jesus Christ at any time. We can't postpone and procrastinate all this kind of stuff. So we've got to be alert, looking for him all the time. It says, you don't know the day nor the hour, for it's just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave five talents, to another two, to another one, each according to his own ability, and he went on his journey. Now, I've talked about this a lot because I love the scripture. Immediately the one... Now, by the way, a talent, okay, is when it says that the Queen of Sheba brought Solomon something like 25,000 talents of gold. By today's standards, a talent is the equivalent of like 200 pounds of gold, which is unbelievable. The amount of gold she brought him, it was common for kings and rulers to bring each other or things like that. Gifts, major gifts at you know, upon visiting. Today's standards, I don't even know what that is. I'd have to figure it out. It's a lot. It's in the many, many billions, and I don't remember the exact number she gave him. I'm not going to look it up, but it's in the many billions of dollars that she brought him. And when she left, she was super impressed, and her land was blessed, and that was the time when Ethiopia was doing phenomenal, and then after that it fell apart, but on we go. So anyway, so first it's the virgin, talks about, then it goes into the man, the man who's going on a journey, who gave five, two, and one talents, each according to his own ability. So he knew these people. So he leaves. Immediately the one who received the five talents went and traded with them and gained five more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the two talents gained two more. So you're given talents, abilities, dreams. You need to go out and reap or sow those. You've got to sow those. God expects us to do that. Men change the world. Everything that, you know, we talk about on Independence Day, our founding fathers transformed this earth, did they not? I mean, through what? Their dreams, thoughts, hopes, and the writing down of all those such things. So, but then what happens to the one, which I've always been stumped by this. Immediately, okay, so he gave the five, and et cetera. In the same manner, the one, okay, so they went out and they, the five reaped or traded with him and got five more. The two traded with him and got two more. But, and it sounds like it was fast, but it wasn't, because I'll read here in a minute. But he who received the one talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. And then it says, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with him. So it's a long time. It's representative of our lifetime, okay? And it said he settled accounts. So the one who received the five talents came and brought him five more, saying, Master, you entrust me with five talents. I mean, that's a lot, right? I mean, let's say five talents. You're athletic. You've got good looks. You're a great speaker. You can sing, and you're exceptional at engineering or whatever. I mean, you know, those are five talents. But then there's someone with two, and then there's someone with one. And the guys with one, I just watched the movie recently about Johnny Cash. again, it was more depressing than I remembered it. He had a long, tough, hard life. He screwed up. He had a talent. He went through brutality growing up. Really tough, tough life. I had, you know, his brother died in the sawmill, and his dad blamed him and said the devil took the wrong son. And, you know, he went through some tough stuff, a lot of abuse. And so then he ended up on drugs and people don't realize that all that stuff comes from pain. A lot of times suffering, sorrow, a desire to escape. They want to call it an opioid epidemic. A lot of that has to do with the garbage that's getting funneled into this country. They're putting people right now. The pendulum swung so hard that, you've got things like my wife has rheumatoid arthritis, and she's never been big on opiates. She throws up anyway. But the entire rheumatology clinic here in Spokane, rheumatoid arthritis, and they deal with autoimmune disorders. They've completely stopped prescribing any kind of opiate. Well, this is nuts. I mean, I've seen my wife bedridden for weeks at a time, and I've seen other people, you know, go through literally a living hell as their own body attacks itself, and the only relief they can get is opiates. And now they want all these manufactured synthetic drugs. Opiates come from poppies, opium, and then they, you know, of course, man manipulates them and creates things. Every time, you know, heroin was created to be, quote, less addictive than opium or morphine or something like that. And of course, it's the most addictive of all. And, you know, every time man goes and tweaks with God's nature, it's crazy. People have been using opium going back from the beginning of written human history. But opium, the way it comes out of the plant, is a lot more mellowed and mild than a lot of the drugs that we've created. And they are addictive to a lot of people because it numbs pain. And not just physical pain, but emotional pain, because people go through tough times. And so anyway, the Johnny Cash thing was kind of sad. But, you know, for those of you who know, he was a Baptist and he had a tough life. But he came back to the Lord. And, you know, really, he never probably left the Lord. I mean, he just struggled and struggled and struggled. And he was kind of anti-authoritarian, just by the way he was raised. And when he came back to the Lord, you know, he wrote at the end of his life a beautiful, beautiful album, well worth getting, because it's really cool, cool stuff about God and Jesus. So we got the 5, the 2, and the 1. But what's really interesting is his master said, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You're faithful with few. I'll put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master." So go, come to heaven. I'm giving you a lot of responsibilities. We will go to heaven and work. We'll have responsibilities up there. We'll be working. We'll be preparing for various festivals and feasts and end times and, you know, who knows, right? Same within the garden. It said he put the man in the garden to tend the garden. We work. We're active. We're not just going to be in this blissful state. We don't become angels when we die. We get new bodies. Those are physical bodies. We will be active. We'll have the wheel within a wheel to transport us around a 1,500 mile by 1,500 mile structure. Many argue is a pyramid because Jesus calls himself the cornerstone and capstone, and there's other reasons that I'm very confident that's what it is. But again, real quick, we'll touch on this. The guy who got the one talent came and said, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, have what is yours." Now, the guy with one talent is interesting because I think of the Johnny Cashes and the Michael Jacksons and these incredible NFL athletes that come out of the projects that, you know, they're afraid of success. They're afraid to do well. They don't think they deserve it. They have a low self-esteem and they just don't think they're worthy. And what do? They destroy it. And when they look at their God, they have an attitude of God that he reaps where he doesn't sow, and they don't see the loving side of God and the opportunities that they're given. And I'm just telling you, folks, you know, so many people struggle with so many things. Don't turn your back on God. Your sin does not give you a right to turn your back on God. If you're in the middle of the worst time of your life or the hardest times, turn to God. He wants to be there with you through it, and he can do miracles, and we've got to think that way. We've got to believe in ourselves. We have to plan and dream. We've got to speak our dreams. You know, the words of our mouth dictate the direction of our lives. It says in Proverbs that we can speak life or death. Every word we speak, we know that Jesus said it's not what you put in your body, but what comes out of your mouth that can defile you. We have to speak our dreams that God gives us to life. You can't dream it, or you can't do it unless you first dream it and think it. And yes, God does put those ideas inside of you, especially people, kids from the age of 3 will know what they want to do, or if they want to play music, or if they're good at sports. You know, our talents will show up. A lot of it's just desire. There is a saying, though, don't share big dreams with small minds. And I can tell you, throughout my life, when I was in a corporate setting, I had some extraordinary successes, just phenomenal successes. I was the youngest promoted manager in a bank corporation called Norwest Banks, which consumed Wells Fargo. People don't realize that because they kept the Wells Fargo name because it'd been around forever. But I was the youngest promoted manager into a branch that was failing for basically training purposes. And in a short period of time, I had it in the top in the nation a couple times. They called it Star Performer Award. The employees that stayed behind after I left went on and also achieved these types of goals and incredible things. And it was, you know, there was a lot of people, a lot of other managers accused me of cheating, lying, you know, everything they could because, you know, my numbers, quote, made them look bad. But it's like I said, when you're on your way up the hill, people will pull you down. When you're sliding down the hill, people will ride on your back and help you get down faster. And so, anyway, so the one who received the one talent came, said, Master, I know you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. Of course, that's not true. But he says, I was afraid. I went and hid your talent in the ground. See, have what is yours. Here, he says, you can have it back. His master answered and said to him, you wicked, lazy slave. You knew that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I scatter no seed. Now, there's a little bit of sarcasm here, but he's basically saying, if this is what you believed, he said, then you ought to put my money in the bank, and on my arrival, I would have at least received my money back with interest. Therefore, check this. He's take away the talent from him, give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who doesn't have, even what he does have shall be taken away. Then he takes this guy, listen to this, throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness in that place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And then he goes on, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he'll sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him. He'll separate them from one another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you in the foundation of the world. And then he goes on, for when I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. When I was sick, naked, you know, et cetera, you took care of me. That was not the scripture. I sped read it. And then as this, you know, the righteous will say, well, when did we do that? And he'll say, when you, you know, when did you see a stranger and invite you in or naked and clothe you? And he said, they ask, you know, when were you sick and in prison and we came to help you? And the king will answer and say to them, I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. Then he'll also say to those on his left, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire, which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. For, you know, and he repeats it. He says, I was hungry and thirsty. You know, I was a stranger, naked, sick, in prison, and you did not take care of me. And so the extent that you did it to one of the least of these, you did it to me. And he says, these will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. So basically, God prompts us to act. and we need to act. And this is our founding fathers, what they did. They acted on God's influence. They acted on God's dreams. And it's pretty cool to think about that, because you had this group of men that God united to start this country. They knew when they signed this document, the Declaration of Independence, they were signing away their lives. And you know, it's important that we realize our rights come from God, not man. And that's why we need to wage a battle now. And it says, to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving... Well, we did the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. So life, we know what that is. We are lives, right? People can't impede upon them. Liberty, that's freedom, the ability to be free and do what God leads you to do, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, happiness and satisfaction is different. Happiness is, you know, is what you do today. It's what, you know, what makes you happy. Satisfaction, you can be satisfied and not happy, or happy and not satisfied. But basically, you know, we have a right given by God to seek happiness. That's a good thing. If you think about it, God wants us happy. And he says to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, in other words, disavows these unalienable rights, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence. And then it says, prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. In other words, this is a big deal. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they're accustomed. In other words, when governments become oppressive and you get the Hitlers, and it, men don't generally unite and stand up. There's stories of Jews. In one case, 1,000 Jews were marched to their death by 4 soldiers. And they, you know, first they beat and killed an old man in front of them, and the rest of them knew they were going to their death, and they didn't fight. 1,000 Jews, even though they were sick and starved and cold and naked, they could have overtaken 4 soldiers, right? Even though many would have died by bullets or whatever, they know. I mean, but they went right along with it. They just couldn't believe it was happening. And that's what this is saying, that it, mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they're accustomed, because that's called change, courage. And we've got to stand up, and it's not easy, it's hard. And it says, when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. In other words, it's the people's responsibility to find leaders that they feel fit to respect these unalienable rights. Then they go on, the history of the present King of Great Britain as a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. And then they make a list of everything he's done wrong. You know, he's refused to assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good, just like we said earlier, where we get these powerful elitists that, you know, abuse the law for their own favor. He's forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance. In other words, bureaucracy to keep people in oppression, it says, and then it goes, unless suspended in their operation till his assent shall be obtained. And when so suspended, he's utterly neglected to attend to them. And it goes on and on. And we don't have time to really go through the whole thing. But what's important, you know, is that these guys, you know, he's cutting off their trade. He's imposing taxes without their consent. That's where we get this taxation without representation. The brainwashing that happens in this world now, folks, and you know, the Saul Alinsky method of isolating and destroying. You've got, you know, this March, Antifa, this anti-fascist supposedly group. They don't even know what they're doing. They're the most fascist on earth. You know, they just beat this guy recently, a journalist, beat him, spit on him, sprayed him with mace, kicked him, everything. As the cops stood by in San Francisco, I think it was, and let it happen because the, you know, these left-wing liberal socialist governors or sheriffs and mayors allow this stuff because they think they want socialism. We live in the craziest of times. We've got to be thankful for the country we live in, but we've got to be willing to fight. You know, we've got the Bill of Rights. We're very familiar with those. We've got freedom of speech, which is very important. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging freedom of speech or the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Number two is the most important, folks, and we're getting down there, but a well-regulated militia being necessary to secure a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. When you hear these left-wingers saying, oh, you can have guns, but you can't have – they want to use terms like assault rifles and all this stuff. I mean, we've already been neglected the right to carry, you know, equal arms with our government. The design of this is to protect against a tyrannical government. That's exactly what the Constitution follows up on the Declaration of Independence. It says a well-regulated militia, meaning cities and states, they need a group. We have like the National Guard, you know, Montana Air National Guard, you know, Washington Air National Guard, whatever. Their job is to protect us, but they've become part of the federal military force. And subject to their you know, their call of duty at any time, and the structure's just changed. It's not what it was ever designed to be. We're supposed to be secure in our persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures. Those shouldn't be violated. No warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath of affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched, and all, you know, et cetera. A legitimate warrant. But then we've seen this investigation of collusion against Trump where the FBI actually tried to, I mean, the whole system tried to prevent him from getting in. Corruption has infested our system. Okay, so what's important, to be honest with you, is two things. We need to pursue the dreams and hopes and everything that God puts on our hearts. We need to fight to save this country. We need to respect it and love it. And we need, I mean, hypothetically, we want to get rulers that serve our best purposes. That was what the Tea Party movement was about. The media came and destroyed it and defamed it and gave them a bad name, which again goes, you know, the First Amendment, the freedom of the press. We no longer have the freedom of the press. We've got this mandated monopoly on the press. You've got X, Y, and Z, you know, news stations. You get fed left-wing rhetoric and editorials rather than news where they report and you decide. So just, I mean, on the other hand, we live in the greatest country in the history of the world, birthed and ordained by God. I wish I had more time because I've got all kinds of scriptural quotes from our founding fathers about that. You know, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, how about, no free man shall ever be debarred of the use of arms, okay, guns. Laws forbidding the carrying of arms disarm only those who are neither inclined nor determined to commit crimes. Think about it. That is so smart. He's saying criminals will always get guns. It's good people that you're taking them away from. Why? So that they can take us over. So you be aware of all this stuff as you see things unfolding. This next election is getting scarier and scarier. They hate Trump with a hate I can't imagine. Now Trump, you know, he spoke the truth. 30, 40 years ago, he'd have been great. But now we've been taught to, you know, we've got speech control, and they call it hate speech and racism, and they call people racist when they don't say anything to do with race. But anyway, you get the point. Be prepared. You got to have arms, and just you know, pray for this country, speak up for this country, fight for this country. It says, Samuel Adams, the Constitution shall never be construed to authorize Congress to infringe the just liberty of the press or rights of conscience, or to prevent people of the United States who are peaceable citizens from keeping their own arms. We've got to get a free press back. You've got to find information online. Oops, excuse me. There's a, is it Red Pill? I don't have the information with me, but there's a local guy that's got a wonderful news website, conservative constitutional stuff. So have a great 4th of July. I mean, realize the blood that was shed by our founding fathers, the love they had for God, the fact that God inspired this nation in its creation. The stories of George Washington I didn't get to today are so supernatural, it's unbelievable. But know that you are living on the greatest, in the greatest country in the history of the world. We didn't even get into the money thing. These guys understood that being on the gold standard took all the power away from the government and the banks. And then, of course, what crept back in? Government money, bank money, fiat currency. Simplification of that, folks, is, you know, get yourself what you can. Financial, fiscal responsibility, you know, save. Get your money in precious metals. Buy what God says to buy, what the Bible endorses, authorizes, ordains, divinely created elements for that very purpose. All you have to do is give us a call. We'll build portfolios, help you save. I mean, hard assets. In the long run, you'll come out so far ahead. The markets are so swollen right now because of socialism, because of fiat currency created by John Maynard Keynes, a system designed for Marxism to prevail. They're bankrupting the middle class. Our debt's out of control. You guys know what we've done in this nation. You know, put yourself on the gold standard. Get hard assets. Give us a call. Also, the reviews I talk about all the time, go, you know, Google, Bing, whatever. Put them out there. Call us. We'll give you free one or two silver dollars, depending on one or three reviews. Take care. God bless. Have a happy July 4th. Bye-bye.